Hello, and welcome to the Write Club podcast, where we take you behind the pages and into the fascinating world of writing. I'm Beth, this is Mary, and we're part of the team at Writing Magazine and Writers Online. Hi, Mary, how are you today?
I'm really well, thank you. I'm very excited about our guests this week. We're thrilled to be joined by Northern Irish crime writer James Murphy. James is the author of five crime fiction novels, including the gripping Farset Investigation series and his latest psychological thriller, How to Be Dead. James isn't just an accomplished author, he's also the host of the popular podcast, A Life of Crime Writing, where he delves into the craft with other writers and a dedicated mentor through his crime writing workshops, from tackling societal issues in his stories to celebrating local music and fostering the crime writing community. James brings an incredible wealth of experience and creativity to the table.
Hi James, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi guys, thanks for having me.
No, it's brilliant to have you on. Where are we speaking to you from today?
So I am currently in my home office in Antrim in Northern Ireland, which is Antrim would be about 20 minutes or so outside Belfast.
Oh, amazing. So is that your writing space then?
It is indeed, yes. It's a home office, so I supposedly work here doing other stuff, but yeah, mostly my writing as well. So I get to kind of dabble in both.
Oh, nice. Oh, could you describe your writing space a little bit for us?
It used to it's one of our spare rooms at home, that used to be kind of like a man cave, kind of like a geek den. I'm really into like 80s stuff, and superhero memorabilia and all that sort of stuff. And then I decided a wee while ago that I needed to change it up a wee bit and be a bit more grown up about it. So, it's very much, I think, probably a writer space now, and looking a wee bit more professional with the kind of, dark green coloured walls and the books around the place and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, because I do a lot of my workshops and so on online, I thought I maybe should look like a writer as well.
I love that colour wall. It looks really nice.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was just about to say the same thing. It looks really nice and cozy in there.
It's quite dark though, which is good. I suppose when you write the kind of stuff I do, that's probably useful to be in the dark, maybe.
Yeah, you don't want bright yellow walls with rainbows everywhere, do you?
No, not give the right vibe for my audience, I don't think.
James, what inspired you to become a crime writer, and how did you get your start in the genre?
The thing that inspired me was I was always a big crime reader, and a big consumer of crime fiction, in terms of crime TV and true crime documentaries and all that sort of stuff. I was always obsessed with that kind of thing. But my start actually came in a really odd story, involving a psychic medium of all things. We had a friend come to stay, and she had been talking about the supernatural, and she knew it was something that I was interested in. And she happened to mention that she had visited a psychic medium. And almost on a dare, obviously asked me, would I go and do likewise, which I agreed to. And I had been thinking a little bit about writing an awful lot at the time as well, because I was in a very high stress job. I was a school principal, and we had just had our first and only child, so home life was really busy, work life was really busy, and I was just really stressed all the time. And somebody suggested to me that I should really start writing because that would be a great outlet. And I thought, well, giving me something extra to do, that's not really going to help. But I tried it, and it did. And I started kind of dabbling a little bit in writing a bit of crime fiction. And when I went to the medium then, without getting into all the detail, it came up that yes, I should be writing this book, and it needs to be done, and why have I not got it finished, and all that sort of stuff. So I did that, and where I grew up in Belfast, I would still visit family there quite frequently, and I always had the pass on my way to visit my former primary school, which had become derelict and had really gone into disrepair, and it looked such a shame seeing it every week, and I always thought it had this kind of, sounds strange, this lovely, really creepy look to it now, that I always thought, it would be great to set some kind of a story in there. So these things all kind of came together, and that ultimately led me to write my first novel, which was the first in the in the Farshot Investigations Belfast series.
Wow. So are you still working as a school principal when you were writing that?
For that one, for the most part, yeah. But that changed soon after, because the more I was doing it, and obviously getting that kind of creative outlet, the more I realized that actually I needed to scale things back a little bit work-wise, because I was getting really into my writing as well. And so yeah, I gave up the principalship and went back into the classroom part-time, and did some work with a UK university, Edge Hill, which I still do as well, part-time as well. And then that gave me time to kind of relax a little bit in theory, but then the writing thing just took off, I suppose.
And how long was that transition going on for? Was it?
I suppose I would maybe say that I'm still in the transition,
Okay.
but that started about 8 or 9 years ago. So within about the first year, I moved away from the principalship, and I'm just doing the part-time jobs. But again, I'm able to manage my time a lot better now. So although I'm doing more, I'm getting all the good bits of all the things I like about my work, but I've managed to take away the bits that would be stressful or time consuming, or so I'm for the moment really happy with all that.
Sounds like you're
But
living the dream.
yeah, it absolutely. Although it can be difficult, obviously, to still manage time, particularly with home life and all that sort of stuff too. So thankfully, my family are really understanding, and my wife's on the other side of the wall, so she could be saying something completely different in there.
So your
Oh.
latest psychological thriller, How to Be Dead, it draws inspiration from Snow Patrol and Ash. Could you just share how the music influences your creative process?
In a lot of ways, it does, and it's going to sound strange, because one of the first things I would say is when I'm writing, I do not listen to music. I know there are lots of writers out there who sometimes would say that they maybe can't write without having something in the background. I'm not like that at all. But a lot of my peers here in Northern Ireland in the crime fiction writing community, we would be quite close in terms of friendship groups. And we discovered that a lot of us are big music fans, myself included. So I would be really into music as, a pastime, and certainly going to gigs and so on would be frequent for myself and my wife and so on. And I suppose what I found is that that has kind of seeped into my writing. So from day one, and the first book, a lot of my characters, some of the Easter eggs of the books are that the characters' surnames, for example, members of bands and so on that I would be into, or two of my main characters are actually named after Pink, of all people. So there was always that, the kind of Easter egg element. And as I was developing the Farshot Investigation series, I was looking for new characters, or a name for a new character, a new kind of baddie, if you like. And I said, the next name that flashes up on my phone from, be a notification, Twitter or whatever, I'm going to use that name. And it happened to be Nick Banks from Pulp. I'm a huge fan of Pulp. So when that flashed up, I thought, well, I have lots of the other members in there already. So I messaged them and said, can I use your name? And so on. And that led to him saying yes, first of all, becoming a reader of the books, and actually allowing me to interview him for, on occasion, did a radio show as well. So I was able to interview him for that, and that was great. So that was one aspect of, I suppose, how the music fits in. But then when I was moving to the How to Be Dead Carolyn Harkin series, that was very different, because up until then I'd been writing basically a detective series, almost like a police procedural, but I wanted to go a little bit darker and challenge myself a little bit more by writing a psychological thriller. And that was Write Me a Murder, which was the first in the series. So as I was writing that, I was thinking, this is obviously quite different. It's different for me. It's going to be different for my readers. Will it work? And I was really nervous about it. And it actually took quite a bit of time to write that book, possibly because of that. But during that time, a friend and, as I say, another local crime writer, had been funded to produce an anthology of short stories. He had the idea that because we all like music, we should maybe dedicate the anthology to celebrating Northern Irish music. So the idea was that we would all pick a song or a band or, something. And that the brief was as vague as that. That was, go off and pick something and do something. And, we were saying, what length does it need to be? What parameters do we have? It was just literally go and do it, which I found really daunting, but kind of brilliant at the same time, because I thought it was obvious that other people were going to pick, things like Teenage Kicks and all the things that you would immediately think of with Northern Ireland. And I thought, well, I'm going to go for Snow Patrol. And I like the band. I wouldn't say I was a fan of the band, but I really like a lot of their songs. I didn't have a clue what any of them were called. So I decided on Snow Patrol. Literally, first thing I did was look at their Essentials playlist on Apple Music for inspiration for titles, scrolled down the list and came across a song called How to Be Dead. And I thought, that has crime fiction written all over it. And I hit play, obviously, and discovered that actually that was my favourite Snow Patrol song. I just didn't realise it was called that. So I thought, okay, we'll look at some of the ideas within the song and also some of the lyrics within the song. And what I did then was use that as a vehicle to test the water, if you like, for my readers. So essentially, the short story became the first outing for Dr. Carolyn Harkin and those characters. And thankfully, it was really well received. So that gave me the confidence to know that actually, yes, I can put out a psychological thriller. That's okay. But it was so well received, and people were asking me about it so much that I realized that actually, there's a novel in here, which is How to Be Dead, the novel, came into development.
And your protagonist, like you just mentioned, Dr. Carolyn Harkin, she's a fascinating character. What inspired her creation? How has she kind of evolved throughout the series?
In terms of her creation, I thought a lot of it was about me challenging myself as a writer. So it was a new subgenre in crime fiction, but it was also about me maybe looking at narrative voice. And although I had written from a female perspective before, I'd never had the lead character as female. So I thought that would be a really great challenge for me in terms of developing my writer's craft and voice and so on. So I always knew that it was going to be a female lead, and Dr. Carolyn, I don't know where I got the name from actually with that one. That had nothing to do with music. Some of the other characters do. I had her kind of in the back of my mind, but it not fully formed. And then I was teaching a crime fiction writing class in a lovely old building here in Antrim called Clotsworthy House, which is in the centre. Essentially, it's in the centre of a forest park. And again, a really old building that had been restored. And it's used as almost like a community hub. But my first class there was actually on Halloween night, and I drove in, literally drove into the middle of the forest, went to the car park, and I was the first one had arrived. So it was literally my car, and the building looks really gothic and really quite creepy. It was Halloween night, it was foggy, there were crows everywhere. And I got out of the car petrified. Thinking, okay, I need to, but then it was the whole thing about imposter syndrome and all that sort of stuff, which I think a lot of crime writers, myself included, suffer from. When I went in, class started, I had given the delegate some tasks, and I was thinking to myself as I was walking around, actually, any one of these could be a killer. And this is, rather than them writing fiction, could it be that they're like chronicling their work, so to speak? And I thought that would be a really good idea then to develop. And I tried to write it then. And lots of people within the publishing industry that I know had said, yes, that's a really good premise. You should really go with that. And when I sat down and tried to write it, I just couldn't do it. There wasn't, it was a great idea. There wasn't really a story in it that you could flesh out. So I had, as tends to happen with me, kind of real life tends to intervene and give me inspiration. So I was watching the One Show one night, and we had basically within the show there was a piece about stalking, and they had a young woman on being interviewed. Her voice was disguised and she was silhouetted to protect her identity, and she was talking about being followed home from a night out with friends after work. And one of the things that had happened on the journey home was she had become aware that she was being followed, and she did all the usual things that you would you'd expect, maybe speed up, slow down, do I run, all the things that you would maybe consciously think about. And she said that finally whoever it was had been following her literally shouted to her, "How long do I need to follow you before you start to run?" And that just sent a chill through me. So that kind of had me thinking, obviously, about things like, well, I kind of moved on to toxic masculinity and all that sort of stuff, because in my education role, I work with very disenfranchised young people who, people who, for want of a better expression, are broken by society. And I was realizing that through working with them, the teen boys were looking for male role models because they didn't have them in their lives. But the type of people that they were replacing them with, from online, if you like, was frightening. And the teen girls I was working with were kind of being conditioned not so much to think that was okay, but to accept that it was the norm. So I had that in my head, obviously what I'd seen on the One Show in my head. And then I was chatting to my wife about getting older a little bit. I'm in my late 40s now, and I was saying that, as I was aging, I was starting to feel a wee bit more vulnerable than I ever had before. And my wife made the offhand comment, "Well, that's what it's like to be a woman." All those things kind of melded together. The character then, to kind of really get back to the question, Carolyn Harkins suddenly became fully formed. So I used all those experiences to create her as someone who was a victim of stalking, who came back to Northern Ireland to rebuild her life, had settled in a place that she found happiness in as a child, but was now in a situation where actually she was never more vulnerable than she realized. She was visiting a, or sorry, she was delivering a crime fiction writing class in a very, very similar, but in fact the same building that I was doing mine in. And one of her delegates was creating fiction and, reading it out as part of the class. But all that fiction was actually a retelling of elements of her life that they shouldn't have known about. And there was also a kind of a cold case involving a missing girl as well. So essentially, it allowed me to explore the whole aspects of violence against women and girls and toxic masculinity through the vehicle of this crime fiction writing class, because I was able to use the techniques that you would use in delivering a class to explore them. So the book, for example, has a multi-layered narrative where you're getting, a delegate telling their story, then part of it linked to real life and so on. And I thought crime fiction is a really good way to explore all that, because it's one of those genres where you really do deal a lot in tropes. So I was able to say, how do these things become tropes? Why is it always a dog walker finding a body in a park that's usually partially clothed, if even? And it was because tropes actually parrot real life, and that's what was happening. So Carolyn, I suppose, developed pretty quickly and changed, I suppose, in the sense that she was reacting then to, she thought she was coming to have a quiet life, so to speak, but actually had all sorts of new trauma to deal with. And unfortunately for her, it doesn't really let up in the new book and How to Be Dead either.
Oh, that sounds fascinating. I love all the layers there and how you can really explore, a really current issue through a crime novel. And I guess what you were saying about being able to come at it from all angles as well, you can really, really get into that.
Yeah, what I actually found as well is that I mentioned imposter syndrome earlier, and I do struggle with it, and I know a lot of crime fiction writers do. And one of the reasons I started taking the class was to be able to prove to myself that, if I can go and teach other people how to write crime, then that must mean I am a crime writer. I must be able to do it okay myself. In doing that, I used to go into the gardens, the castle gardens, it's called. And at the center of that, there is a lovely statue of essentially an Irish wolfhound that is literally right slap bang in the middle of the gardens. And I always used to go, I was always attracted to it for some reason, I don't know why, but I always used to go just before the class and kind of check in and say hello to this dog, which sounds bizarre, I know, but it kind of gave me the sense that, yeah, you do belong here and you're all right. But I looked into some of the history of that, and the dog is actually a fairly big part of local folklore here in Antrim. Now, I'm from Belfast originally, so I didn't know any of this. But it goes back in history in the sense that the castle that was part of the gardens, used to house a lady called Lady Marian Langford, who, when she was first married, was out exploring the grounds, was attacked by a wolf. And out of nowhere, this Irish wolfhound appeared, fought the wolf to death, to the wolf's death, I should say. And Lady Marian then brought the wolfhound home, nursed it back to health, and that became their pet, if you like. And years later, it saved their lives again because it warned of an invasion. And there was also talk of a fire at one point that it warned them about too. So this dog became this kind of symbol of heroism, if you like. And the idea then was that it was created, there was a statue created of it when it died. And it too came into folklore that as long as that statue remained in one piece, then Antrim would be safe, which again, I love the idea of. So I thought that story of Lady Marian is, it's my book then became, I suppose, a bit of a modern retelling of that, because the idea that I was looking at then was that not all wolves are four-legged, if you like. So the whole thing just seemed to go from having the bones of an idea, that seemed to have a pretty good premise that I couldn't write about, to something that just really came together. Oh, well, I think really well in the end. So yeah, that's where I got to with that. Again, it was really well received, and people were talking about the short story, so we had to go to How to Be Dead.
Fascinating. You're obviously really aware of stories all around you and feel like you collect amazing stories to put into your writing in some way.
I don't think I really ever do it consciously, but I think yeah, it definitely does happen. And I almost liken it to, I know nothing about fashion, and my wife would tell you that as well. You probably can see it yourselves, but I kind of liken it to, if you see like a piece of material and you think that would be really nice, and then you might see another piece and you think that would be really good lining, or and then you see a button or something. So I'm always kind of looking for little bits that you can actually put together to make a finished garment kind of thing.
So we wanted to talk to you as well about the podcast that you host, A Life of Crime. Can you tell us a little bit about it and what do you like about it? Is it connecting with the other authors or?
First of all, I haven't done it in a while, it's on hiatus, but it is coming back later on this year. At the start, when I was doing it, I was terrified. And essentially, it too was kind of born out of me thinking I wasn't really that good as a crime writer. There were lots of reasons behind it, I suppose. I became aware really early on in my crime fiction writing career that it's obviously the most consumed genre out there. And without being flippant about it, great crime writers are ten a penny. So you need to be able to do something to essentially stand out. What I realized early on was I would have networked a lot, gone to obviously other people's events, gone to workshops and so on. And I was very lucky that I built up a really good group of people around me who were at all stages of their own careers, from aspiring writers right through to bestsellers. And I was looking at the fact that, there must be something all these people have in common. And it really was that yes, they were great crime writers, they were great storytellers, but it was also the fact that they were going out of their way to develop their careers. So looking at every aspect of their career in terms of like a business, but also really going out of their way to connect with their readers. And those were all things that terrified me, because I had this really traditional view of writing in my head, where I would sit in my nice little secluded room here, type away at these bestsellers and, email them off somewhere, and that's all I really had to do about it. And that was obviously really, really naive, because even the bestsellers out there put as much time into marketing their work as they do writing it. So I realized that I kind of had to confront my fears and also learn a lot. So I was thinking, well, I have a really good network of people here. Let's kind of kill two birds with one stone. So I came up with the idea, which was funded by, I was lucky to have it funded by the Arts Council of Northern Ireland, where I would sit down for an hour each week with obviously crime writers. That was the specific genre, but crime writers at all stages of their careers. Someone like it would have been someone who had literally just dipped their toe in the water and how they were navigating the process. But then the next week it could have been someone who had, to use that kind of expression, it was not their first rodeo, so and see what their journey was like and what people could learn from it and what I could learn from it. And the thing about crime writers, and I'm sure it's the same with writers of all genres, but the thing about crime writers is we do tend to be quite supportive of each other. So if I was saying, I'm doing this podcast, I'd love to sit down with you for an hour and pick your brains, most people would have said yes, do it absolutely. And I think oftentimes maybe putting themselves out of their comfort zone by doing it as well. But I think we all realized that we would all benefit from that because we all came to it with experience that, so we could learn from each other and we knew that other people could learn from us. But we also knew that a lot of people, in fact, most of our readership buy into the writer just as much as they buy into the books. So actually having some kind of vehicle that you can use to build connections with readers was ideal. And that's exactly how that worked, I suppose, for me and for the guests, because each of us were coming with readership, if you like. And I think by us sitting down having those conversations together, the readers were kind of, I would say, more often than not thinking, actually, yeah, she is a really nice person. I think I would like to read her books, or like, yeah, he sounds like he comes across like a great guy. So yeah, maybe I'll look into his work as well. And the whole thing just became really useful. And actually, I wasn't expecting it to take off at all. For me, it was just I suppose, an experiment of sorts. And when the figures started coming in, I was thinking to myself, really, is this like, what is going on here? Why are people liking this so much? And I mean, my podcast, I have to say, is nothing like you guys. You're so much more professional. There was talk of editing and stuff earlier on. I have no idea how to do any of that. So literally it was one take, and that was that. I think that possibly maybe endeared it to people as well, because you got the kind of what was recorded was what you got. My computer was getting like 100 emails and each one was dinging and I couldn't turn off the sound on that, or if somebody had to stop and redo something, that all went in. And I think people kind of thought, well, that this is good, it's natural, and it's actually, it's showing the relationship between the two writers as well, that how we got each other through some of those things. And I was really lucky then that BBC Radio Ulster here in Northern Ireland caught on to it, and they reviewed it as one of their weekly podcast reviews. They've reviewed it really favorably and said that one of the things that endeared them was the fact that it was just literally two people sitting down having crack for, an hour or whatever, and maybe talking a wee bit of crime. There was one interview I did with Sheila Bugler, who is based, I think, in Brighton. She's originally from Ireland. And the idea was that again, we would talk about her writing journey. I think we were talking for about an hour and a half, and it was mostly about parenting. I think we might have had like 5, 10 minutes of crime in there somewhere. So it kind of went off in those tangents as well. So yeah, it became really good, so much so that I was asked to park it for a while and go and do a weekly radio show called Crime Scene on a local station here. And again, I thought, no way. I mean, despite my job and despite being a principal and so on, I'm probably one of the most terrified people of doing something like that that you would come across. I've got much better at it now since my career's developed, but I thought, again, this is a new platform, this is a new challenge. It's a way of setting myself apart from other crime writers. I'll be honest, I was also looking for a new publishing deal at the time, so I thought that's going to look really good on the CV. So I did it, and it did really well too. It was a bit different. We had, part of it was a life of crime writing, so we had a segment in there for maybe 10, 15 minutes, and then we did other things, like I would talk about songs that were actually written about crime that people didn't really realize, or we had lots of little features and so on. And it was doing really well too. But then what I was realizing was, yes, this was brilliant. I was building my profile as a crime writer, but I didn't have any time to write any books. So I got to the stage where I was, being invited to appear on crime fiction festivals and so on, and thinking, I literally have nothing to promote. Yes, it's elevating my status as a writer, but what use is that, if you don't have any work? So I was very conscious then that I was becoming a presenter who writes rather than a writer who presents. So I stopped the radio show and put the podcast into mothballs for a while. Got these two books done, already started the next one, and now I have a little bit of time where I can sit down and record again. So the podcast will be back, I think, towards the end of the year.
Amazing. We'll have to keep an eye out for
Yeah, it'll not be edited. I still don't
that.
get it.
I feel like it's sometimes it just shows, like you say, how authentic it is and how real your conversation is. If you mess up, I say we edit these, but we get to the end and we listen to the whole thing back, and I'm like, oh, you know what? We'll just keep that bit in because it shows that it's real.
Absolutely. And I know it's another thing I'm kind of conscious of now is certainly other genres must be the same, but most crime writers I know, even the really successful ones, it's a full-time job, but a lot of them also have a full-time job. So you're really conscious that they're time poor. So you're thinking, we don't have time to ask you to do it again.
Saying about imposter syndrome is interesting as well, because for us, a lot of our listeners are aspiring writers. So if they can listen to writers and see that they're real people, that have the same worries as them, and I think that's amazing. I think that's going to be really helpful for people.
Yeah, I don't know any writer, and I'm thinking even of, some of the bigger names that people would recognize. I don't know any crime writer that doesn't suffer from it. So, and you'll see us all. I mean, I did Murder One, which is the biggest crime fiction festival in Ireland. I did that in October. When we went out to the audience, it was all relaxed and it was all really fun, and I spent a lot of the time telling jokes and stuff, bizarrely. But if you'd have seen us in the green room beforehand, where we're sitting shaking and wondering what we'd be able to read our work, it's all, yeah, I don't know how we do it. But saying that, as soon as, certainly for me anyway, as soon as I'm kind of pushed out in front of the audience, if you like, the fear goes. So I suppose I'm lucky in that regard. But yeah, in terms of aspiring writers, I think certainly the main message I would give would be get yourself out of your comfort zone and go and do things that make you uncomfortable, because it's the only way you're actually gonna, if you're passionate about your stories and you want other people to read them and you want to share them with other people, it comes with the sacrifice, and that sacrifice is actually getting yourself out there and doing stuff that you would never in a million years think that. I mean, if somebody had said to me, even that we would be talking like this now, and I would be talking through a lot of the experiences that I've had, I would have said, no, there's no way that just wouldn't happen. So yeah, I think it's something you have to just kind of push yourself with.
As a founding director of the Northern Ireland Festival of Writing and a key figure in National Crime Reading Month, how do you see the crime writing community evolving?
Actually, that's really interesting, because from my point of view, I still see myself almost as an aspiring crime writer, and I still see myself as very much at the beginning of my journey. In recent times, I've become really conscious of the fact that actually I've been around for a wee while. I'm 8 years in now, and in that 8 years I've obviously progressed. So what I'm seeing now is, I thought I was like the new generation in inverted commas, and that my peers were, we were the ones that were kind of, the mantle was being passed to us. But actually what I'm finding now is, no, that there's a whole new generation coming behind us again. And I use the term generation loosely, in the sense that, writers of all ages. One of the people I have in mind actually is a woman called Linda Hagen, who I hope she won't mind me saying is in her 70s, I think. Maybe not, actually. But yeah, she's retired and so on. And she was one of the people who I taught through my fiction workshops, and she's went on to become a prolific crime fiction author and is doing really well. So there's a whole new, I mean, she would be one of maybe four or five I could name that I see coming through now. And I suppose that the really exciting thing for me is that these people are coming through, but actually Northern Ireland seems to be a real melting pot for crime fiction, and it's a place where we can all coexist really effectively, and we all network quite a bit, and you know, as I say, there's room for all of us, and we all seem to be doing relatively well. To the point that I have a crime fiction colleague, if you like, Sharon Dempsey, who's releasing a new work tonight in Belfast at No Alibis. But because we all seem to be so busy, it used to be that, you know, if I was doing an event or whatever and I needed someone, I could say, you know, give such and such a call, can you come and do a panel with me? And it would be fine. Nowadays, even from a social point of view, literally we can't manage to get one or two of us in the same room. It really is evolving to the, in a very exciting way. And I think also because of how TV drama has developed and streaming and so on has developed, I think the Northern Irish crime writing voice is becoming much more fascinating across the water, if you like, from us as well. And that's opening up new possibilities because in terms of being successful as a writer within the UK publishing industry, there were little kind of peaks, if you like, yes, of successful Northern Irish writers. But now it seems to be, you know, much more of a wave, which is quite exciting and great to be part of.
Well, having said that, I noticed that How to Be Dead is being developed into a short film. Could you tell us about the process of screenwriting that and how that's compared?
Yeah, that was a really interesting one actually, because when the short story anthology came out, we were starting to get reviews in and so on, and it was great. And one of the people who reviewed it was a director and producer who worked on the BBC drama Hope Street. It's a police drama, but it would be quite cozy. He had approached me and said, you know, I would like to make a short film. Could we meet? And the I suppose the short story was we met. He wanted to make it into a short film. I liked the idea of it, but knew nothing about it, and thought, this guy seems really good. I'll, you know, let him deal with it because he obviously has experience. And he emailed me later on in the day and said, you know, I want you to write this, the screenplay. And I said, well, I've no experience. I know nothing about it. And he said, no, that's okay. I'll teach you. So over a few Friday afternoon sessions, he literally taught me how to use the software and how to write a screenplay. And we then drafted a few versions of that until we got to a really good final short film, kind of 15 minutes. And when it was put in for submission, they said, we love it, but actually it reads to us like the beginning of a pilot for a series, which is probably, and also in a way, why How to Be Dead was developed a bit more in terms of a novel. But for me then, I kind of had to put the brakes on it because I struggle to find time to write novels, you know, without going down the route of being a screenwriter as well. So I've parked that for a little while until, obviously, after we get the podcast recorded and so on, it could be something I could revisit. But I'm really enjoying writing the Carolyn Horgan novels. So I'm kind of hopefully just going to stick with that for a wee while. And if the screenwriting comes back again, takes off again, then we'll deal with that when it comes.
I think you've answered my next question, which was what's next for you as a writer?
Well, in terms of the next writing project, there's another Carolyn Horgan novel in development at the moment. I tend to end the books on cliffhangers, and the cliffhangers tend to give a clue where the story's going to go next. So without giving anything away, I have, you know, if we think of the analogy we used earlier on, I have the material for the coat and the lining, not so much the buttons yet. And it's going to be a bit more kind of straddling the lines between psychological thriller and maybe supernatural kind of demonology kind of thing. So that's kind of in the melting pot in my head, if you like, at the moment. And that's what the next project going to be.
Sounds fascinating. I'm looking forward to seeing that one. We always try and end the podcast by asking you for a book recommendation. What have you got for us?
Ah, right. Well, the current book I'm reading is a book called The Killing Sense by Sam Blake. Sam Blake has actually been a great supporter of mine and a great mentor. So I love reading her books. She's a great friend, but her books are amazing. And this one really stands out for me. It's her books were already brilliant, but this one just seems to take it up a level. And again, without getting into too much detail, it takes place in Paris and it's essentially the hunt for a serial killer. And the premise for that is, well, not so much the premise, but the core idea is that, and something I didn't know, people with red hair, if they wear perfume, it smells differently on their skin than it would anyone else.
That's true.
Yeah, apparently so.
Put some on and we'll test it.
So it basically it charts the hunt for a serial killer and the serial killer's penchant, without going into too much French badly, is for redheads, and there's this whole idea of the perfume and how they smell and so on. So it has been brilliant for me. I'm literally probably one chapter away from the end, but it's one of those ones where you kind of slow down when you're reading on to the end. So that would certainly be what I would recommend.
Sounds right up my street. That brings us to the end of this episode. So, if anybody wants to purchase your books or give them a read, where can they find them?
Certainly within Northern Ireland, they are stocked in all the independent bookstores. Beyond that, Amazon would be the best route to take. I think directly from the publisher as well, Spellbound Books. And I know a lot of the local bookstores, I think have the online element as well. So in terms of like signed copies and stuff, I think certainly the Secret Bookshelf here in Carrickfergus would post them out and so on.
Yeah, I have downloaded the new one, How to Be Dead, onto my Kindle. So that's on my list. It's the next one on my list to read. So
Oh, brilliant. You need to go back to the other one first.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to giving those a read. So thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to come and talk to us. It's been really great having you on.
Oh, thank you. It's been lovely to chat to you both.
Been really nice. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for tuning into The Write Club. We hope you enjoyed this episode and feel inspired to keep writing. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter at Writers Online, your go-to for writing tips, competitions, and exclusive updates. Plus, you'll never miss an episode of The Write Club. Until next time, happy writing!